the Spirit of Jazz podcast, where music dances with mystery, with your hosts, Bill Carter and Jeff Kellum.
Welcome back to the Spirit of Jazz. This is Bill Carter.
And this is Jeff Kellum.
And we're glad that you're here as we continue to have a conversation about jazz and what makes it spiritual. And today, I think, Jeff, we're going to keep talking about creativity, that unusual and rare quality of human life that delves into the imagination, that makes old things new and makes new things fresh.
Mm-hmm. I just saw a quotation from a Julia Cameron who said that creativity is God's gift to us, and using our creativity is our gift back to God.
I think that works. So Julia Cameron says in one of her books that you should begin each day by writing by hand 4 pages or so of free association, whatever comes out. And this kind of primes the pump, or I guess maybe flushes the pipes, in this kind of sense of opening up what could then come. Do this in the morning before you even do your exercise, have your coffee, or eat your Wheaties.
Yep, it could be a very dangerous thing to do. You know, I might reflect on my dreams, just letting things go from the middle of the night when my subconscious is reeling. Sometimes, you know, our dreams are picking up little seeds from the day before, little pictures, and then our brains are weaving these wonderful stories.
Yeah.
And you want to remember them in the morning and write them down.
And if we think of jazz as proceeding like a story, solo is telling the story, said the saxophonist Lester Young, and that they don't come from nothing. They come from this kind of stew of bubbling imagination that simply hasn't been released yet.
Yeah. My new book is called Sparks and Stars. That's going to be available in bookstores nowhere.
Okay. Well, you know, you're going to have to write that book before you get it published.
But I like the idea of sparks and stars. You know, I think the stars looking way beyond ourselves, and the sparks, pictures sitting around a campfire, just watching where the sparks go. That's where our thoughts are going, you know?
Well, and that spark between the creator and Adam on the Sistine Chapel, you know, there's a spark between them, like an electrical charge, like we're being bequeathed the opportunity to also create. You know, in future episodes, we're going to spend a little time talking about Keith Jarrett, who had that marvelous practice of creating solo jazz concerts from nothing. And he had this great quote. He said, "It really depends on whether a player conceives of nothing as the lack of something or pregnant with everything."
Yeah, I like that.
We're a couple of old dudes. What do we know about pregnancy? But think of a seed gestating and then suddenly being birthed. I mean, it's a very positive and powerful image for creativity.
Yeah.
How about if we listen to a tune by the Presby Bop Quartet? And the one I have in mind is one that we keep playing. It is a hymn tune, traditionally from Ireland, called Slain. And the church adds lyrics. They call it Be Thou My Vision. Give it a listen, and then we'll see what we want to talk about in terms of creativity.
All right.
hey, did anybody get hurt after that bass solo? I chuckle every time I listen to it.
it's Tony Marino, right?
That's Tony Marino. In fact, when we played that album for the people who helped produce it, that was the one part where they just got awfully quiet.
Wow. Now, I can hear the most basic tune of Slain or Be Thou My Vision. Then we have your ads or your arrangement. And then we have the band's own expression, which I assume there's some improvisation in there. Where did the whole thing start for you in terms of a seed?
The seed actually was planted when a friend requested that I play the tune for him for a, for kind of a ceremony where he was going to begin his work as the pastor of a church way out in the country. And I thought, okay, I'm going to start with the basic tune, dwell with it for a little bit, try to imagine how it might unfold. And then I simply, the moment came and I just did it. Huh. Afterwards, I tried to figure out, so what just happened? And a couple things happened. One was that bass line, that's kind of the cue to kind of set the tempo. And then the next thing that happened was kind of a reharmonization of a tune that basically is pretty much a pentatonic melody, a five-note melody. And then thinking about what chords would fit with that. What rhythmic displacement, ba da 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 da, boom, boom. And then thinking that that's a pretty good setup for a blues, which in this case would be in the key of E flat. So that's mm-hmm. where we start. And we get that kind of churning rhythm going, and Al improvises on the blues.
This is Al Hamm.
This is Al Hamm on saxophone. And then the setup phrase, ba da dee da doo da do ba da 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 dee ya da, and that kind of sets it up to go into 4-4, which is the sort of thing that my old mentor Dave Brubeck would do. And then from there, we kind of come back to a fast waltz. And then we hand it off to Tony to do whatever he does. And it sounds like he's free from harmony and tempo, but the reality is, if you keep your hand tapping or your foot tapping, the tempo's right there. He bucks up against it, but it lands exactly on the form of a 12-bar blues. And then we go back into the tune with the setup of that phrase and the bass, and then take it out.
Now, do you ever have to limit the freedom that the musicians have or limit the creativity by reining them in when you make a recording?
When we make a recording, we might, if we're playing live, less so. At this point, and again, the band has been at it for years and years, and there's a high level of trust. And when we hand off somebody's moment to them to create a solo, then we basically just trust that.
Yeah.
With a piece like this, we know the cues to kind of set, to kind of come back in. In recent years, Ron Vincent, the drummer, has been opening up with a drum solo. We played it some time back for the first time with Michael Carbone on saxophone after Al's semi-retirement began. And Mike let me take the first solo, and I'm thinking, no, that's the fast one. But he was okay with that. Yeah. And if I'm honest, the music needs to have a future. We're talking about an open universe here, that the music simply doesn't have a past that you replicate because it's been written down and maybe even published, but it has a future. And maybe that's one of the things that makes jazz a little different from other styles of music, this trust that it's going to open up and go into the future somehow.
I heard someone say that creativity basically begins by being alive to the present moment, but then letting that moment fly away because it is only the present moment.
That's right. That's right. And inhabiting that present moment as a trust that something will be emerging. You know, I think of this just in terms of what this might mean for life in the spirit or the spiritual life, that, where does hope come from? Hope comes from the possibility of something turning out well, of something evolving, of something going in the right right trajectory in the right direction. That's so important, because otherwise we're confined to what we know and what we see and what we've lived through. But the possibility of something new, that's what jazz is all about.
Yeah. You know, the biblical message often has angels showing up saying, don't be afraid. Sometimes, you know, that kind of the music of the angels is to take off and don't hold yourself back. Let it go.
Right. Yeah. Which, the older we get, I find that it really is a matter of trust. It's completely a matter of trust. You have to have your skills together. You have to be, if you're playing jazz, you have to be able to listen and react to others around you, as well as play your own instrument, toot your own horn.
Yeah.
But you're always doing it kind of with the support of others. So you're not completely flying solo, unless, of course, you're the only one who's playing at that time, then it is a solo.
But the tune that you played, Be Thou My Vision, I mean, I look at the layers of that. Yes, we've been talking about the music involved, but just the whole idea of vision and asking the Spirit to be our vision and to open our eyes to new things and open our hearts, you know, the eyes of the heart.
And I think sometimes it happens in spite of ourselves. The vision breaks forward. The vision breaks through in ways that we weren't anticipating. You know, one of my favorite stories about this is back in 1987, Dave Brubeck got a phone call. And he took the message and shook his head in disbelief, because he had just received an invitation to write music for the first papal mass in the United States. It was going to be in Candlestick Park, the old San Francisco Giants baseball stadium. And they wanted him to write a piece on a text from the Gospel of Matthew. Upon this rock, I will build my church. The gates of hell will not prevail against it. And he said, well, thank you, but that's really, I'm not worthy to do that. That's kind of above my pay grade. And then he went to bed that night and dreamed the entire piece. It was going to be a chorale and fugue. It needed to be 9 minutes long, which was the time they determined that the Popemobile would come in through the center field fence, circle around a couple of times. And he dreamed the whole piece when he was asleep. Yeah. And then got up and said, well, maybe I was hasty. I think I got a message from headquarters.
Well, that brings us full circle. We started talking about dreams, visions, and now here we are with that wonderful Brubeck story. And then he wrote it, and then they were kind of, I talked about asking you if you ever have to rein people in. Well, the papal authorities had to rein him in, didn't they?
Well, they did. They did. There was apparently a lot of fuss in the press about the possibility of a jazz musician doing church musician, there was a lot of fuss in the press about a jazz musician doing church music. And at this point, one of the dignitaries was looking over the shoulder of the score and said to the conductor, what's this section here that says improvisation? And the conductor said, well, this is where Mr. Brubeck and his colleagues will interpret the themes, musical themes in the mass. And they said, well, we can't do this. The press will have a field day, and we're not really sure about having an improvisation at a papal mass, which is why Dave tells the story, and maybe I've told you that they sat on folding chairs listening to Dave's piece. The Dave Brubeck Quartet was there, and they didn't play along. But Dave got his revenge. At one point in the mass, Pope John Paul II stepped up to the edge of the platform, looked down at Dave, and made the sign of the cross. And Dave said to his conductor, did he just bless us? And Russell, his conductor, said, either that, or he's trying to learn how to conduct in 4/4 time. It's a great story, because it tells us something. The opposite of freedom is control and sticking to the script. And jazz pushes up against that.
Well, and isn't that one of the reasons that it's kind of awkward to have jazz in church? Because church is, liturgy is pretty much, especially in some traditions, is pretty much set. There's not room for improvisation. The so-called free churches, I guess, are a little bit less restrictive.
That's right. I mean, the first time I ever heard a Hammond B3 organ was in a Pentecostal church in Syracuse, and they had a drummer, and they were going kind of wild. And of course, the service went longer than 59 minutes. It went on a couple of hours. These are themes that we'll return to again. Is the universe essentially open? Is hope possible? Is redemption possible? Is freedom possible? Is healing possible? And I think these are questions that resoundingly in jazz are answered with yes. You know, there's a story, Jeff, maybe that I'll conclude with today, and it was a story well told and we'll include in the show notes. And it was a night that Herbie Hancock was playing with the Miles Davis Quintet. They were in Stockholm playing a tune by Miles called So What, and they were cooking. Everything was just going in the right direction. And at one point when the music was ascending and climbing with its energy, Herbie hit a chord that was 100% wrong. And Miles, the boss on trumpet, kind of turned and looked at him. And Herbie thought, oh, no, I've just destroyed the moment. And then Miles played some notes that made Herbie's chord sound right. As Herbie says, kind of drawing on his own Buddhist faith, Miles turned my poison into medicine. There was the possibility of a wrong note, but with imagination and freedom, Miles made it turn in another direction and actually kept going in his solo. So there was forgiveness in that moment. There was freedom. And there was a possibility of something new coming from headquarters.
Thanks for listening to the Spirit of Jazz podcast. This is a production of Presby Bop Music. To find out more about Presby Bop, our music, concerts, and recordings, please explore our website at www.presbybop.com. And send us a note telling us what you think about the Spirit of Jazz. We'd love to hear from you. Check in with us again next time. I'm Jeff Kellum.
And I'm Bill Carter. Thanks for tuning in.